Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001, Destroying Order.
Hello. George Bush had his wife on television last Saturday, drumming up public support for his war. The basic theme of her message was that the Taliban and fundamentalist Muslims generally don't treat their women the way politically correct Americans believe they should be treated. The Muslims make them wear head-to-toe covering in public, won't let them drive cars or hang out in shopping malls, and there's hell to pay if one of them is caught flirting with a man who isn't her husband. Worst of all, from Laura Bush's point of view, the women under Taliban control aren't permitted to work in factories or offices, but instead must stay home and take care of the kids. The message was that it's our duty to make the folks in Afghanistan treat their women the way Mrs. Bush thinks they should be treated. If they won't do things her way voluntarily, then it's our duty to use cruise missiles and B-52s to force them to do it her way. Another theme of Mrs. Bush's message was that the aim of terrorists is to oppress women. Osama bin Laden's September 11th attack didn't have anything to do with Israel or the U.S. government's long-term support of Israel's aggression against her Muslim neighbors. His aim was to oppress women. He hates us because American women are permitted to wear shorts and to hang around shopping malls instead of staying home with the kids. He wants to use terrorism to force us to make American women behave like Afghan women. The nutcase feminists over here may have believed that, but it sounded just as silly to me as Mr. Bush's claim that the September 11th attack was unprovoked, that we were attacked just because the fundamentalist Muslims hate our freedom and democracy. Well, I am sure that fundamentalist Muslims do look on American behavior with disgust. I am sure that they are shocked by the way many of our women dress in public. They are shocked by the effeminate behavior of many of our men. They are shocked by the morally and socially destructive propaganda we permit Hollywood and New York to pour into our homes through television. But I am equally sure that their disapproval of our behavior here in America was not the reason for the September 11th attack. And I am sure that they have no intention of trying to oppress American women or to make Americans change their behavior over here. Their concern is only with what we do in their part of the world. One other thing I'm quite sure about is that George Bush didn't put his wife on the air last Saturday to talk about the oppression of women in Afghanistan because he really cares about that or because he really believes that Osama bin Laden wants to force American women to wear burqas. His aim was strictly to drum up support for his ongoing war against Israel's enemies in the Middle East. Actually, the Jewish brainwashing machine in Hollywood was churning out hate propaganda against Afghanistan even before the Taliban government refused the Bush government's demand that it turn over Osama bin Laden. There was a special program about Afghanistan on CNN instead of the standard news programming. It was clearly aimed at persuading American liberals and feminists that Muslim fundamentalists, especially those in Afghanistan, are a bad bunch. When I saw the program, I said to myself, somebody is getting ready to wage war against Afghanistan, whether the Taliban government turns over Osama bin Laden or not. And this program is designed to build up war sentiment among Americans. I've been seeing a lot of news reports about events in Afghanistan that most Americans don't have a chance to see. For example, I have a very disturbing set of photographs from Ananova, a news agency in the United Kingdom. The photos were taken last week just after George Bush's buddies in the Northern Alliance moved into Kabul. A Taliban soldier who had stayed behind tried to surrender. The Northern Alliance soldiers beat him up, and then they pulled down his pants and castrated him. And while he was writhing in agony on the ground, they began using him for target practice. I never will forget the look of wide-eyed terror on the man's face just before he was castrated. The last photograph in the series shows two Northern Alliance soldiers with big grins on their faces, pumping bullets from their AK-47s into the poor bastard, while other Northern Alliance people, also grinning, stand around watching the spectacle. I was surprised to see a few photographs of the same incident in this week's issue of Time magazine. Surprised because Time magazine and its boss, Gerald Levin, are solidly on George Bush's team, and they want us to think well of Mr. Bush's Northern Alliance buddies. Of course, Time did sanitize its account of this Taliban soldier's fate by neglecting to mention the castration. Although elsewhere in this week's issue, a reporter describes how he was invited to watch while a prisoner's eyes were gouged out with a knife. These people doing the castrating and eye gouging are the nice folks Mr. Bush has been paying with our tax dollars to fight the Taliban. These are the people Laura Bush would have us believe will end the oppression of women in Afghanistan. I doubt it. In fact, Mr. Bush's Northern Alliance buddies would about as soon gang rape women in Taliban territory and then hack off their breasts as they would castrate and murder Taliban POWs. They get a big kick out of that sort of thing, and that's what they used to do pretty regularly before the Taliban took over and forced them into their enclave in northern Afghanistan a few years ago. I'm not saying that the Taliban supporters are nice people, but they certainly are no worse than George Bush's buddies, and they did impose law and order on their country. Law and order that no longer exist, thanks entirely to George Bush. The Taliban had forced a certain code of behavior on Afghan women, and on Afghan men too, I should add, out of religious conviction. The Northern Alliance people don't care as much about religion. They don't care whether women wear burqas or not. They just like to gang rape and mutilate them. And they've done a lot of raping and castrating in the past few days, courtesy of the U.S. government. In addition to raping and castrating and gouging out eyes, they like to impale prisoners on sharpened stakes and watch them wriggle. Most Americans don't get to see any of this because the small portion of it reported by the media here is sanitized and minimized in order to keep the people who are doing the dirty work for the New World Order gang in Afghanistan from looking too bad. The consequence of this one-sided news coverage is that a substantial fraction of Americans believe Mrs. Bush when she announces that we are turning Afghanistan over to the Northern Alliance in order to end the oppression of women there. And they believe Mr. Bush when he assures them that we are helping the good guys in Afghanistan beat the bad guys in order to end terrorism. As I said last week, what Mr. Bush really is trying to do is replace the Taliban with a more corrupt government that can be bribed and threatened more easily than the Taliban could. He wants a puppet government that will not be a threat to Israel. George Bush knows how to end terrorism against America from that part of the world. He doesn't have to start a war or bomb anyone or overthrow anyone else's government. All he has to do is quit letting Israel use America, to quit helping the Israelis kill Palestinian women and children with weapons and money supplied by the United States. He knows that as well as I do, but he pretends that he doesn't. And that's one of the reasons I know he is a crook. And his wife is a crook, too. If she were really concerned about the plight of women in that part of the world, she would speak out about what the Jews in Israel are doing to Palestinian women and children. She would protest the white slave trade that is flourishing in Israel, with tens of thousands of white women lured or kidnapped to Israel from Eastern Europe and forced to work as sex slaves there in appalling conditions. She would not stand beside her husband and give a big smile and a hug to Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, the butcher of Beirut, the Jewish leader who engineered the murder of thousands of Palestinian women and children in Lebanon in 1982, whenever he comes to Washington. The Bush family is a family of liars and traitors, corrupt people flourishing in an increasingly corrupt period for America. It is too bad that they cannot be made now to experience the things that they force men and women in Afghanistan and Palestine to experience. Perhaps the time for that will come later. Meanwhile, they are riding high on the hog and are convinced that they're pretty smart for selling out our people and doing the will of the Jews in return for Jewish political support. They believe that they can bring the whole world under Jewish rule and benefit themselves at the expense of all the rest of us. They believe that they can bring about the New World Order, as George Bush's father used to brag when he was president, by waging war after war against countries that refuse to knuckle under, Iraq, Serbia, Afghanistan, using our unlimited supply of cluster bombs and cruise missiles to terrify dissident countries into submission and topple stubborn governments so that they can be replaced with compliant ones. George Bush and his colleagues are willing to risk more foreign terrorist attacks along the way to their New World Order. In fact, in some ways, foreign terrorist attacks are useful to them. They are much more concerned about domestic resistance to their New World Order scheme than they are about foreign terrorism. And when I say domestic resistance, I'm not thinking primarily about domestic terrorism. The government and media crowd are not terribly concerned about domestic terrorism unless it is waged on a scale much larger than it has been in the past and is sustained long enough to have a destabilizing effect. In fact, occasional acts of domestic terrorism are useful to them, just as acts of foreign terrorism are, but in a different way. Foreign terrorist attacks are useful in that they provide a pretext for wars needed to force unwilling countries into submission to the New World Order, as is the case of the current war against Afghanistan and the planned war against Iraq. Of course, when there is no threat of terrorism, the New World Order planners generally can find some other pretext. That was the case with the Clinton government's war against Serbia, for example. The excuse there was that the Serbs were mistreating the Albanian minority in Serbia's Kosovo province, and so we had to bomb Belgrade in order to force the Serbs to see the error of their ways. But an excuse that flimsy often won't hold up under stress. If the Serbs had had any kind of decent air defense system and had taken out a dozen or so U.S. bombers over Belgrade, or if they had been able to sink one of our ships in the Adriatic, which was firing cruise missiles into Serbia, the American public would have lost its stomach for the war in a hurry. Much better for sustaining a war of that sort is a foreign terrorist attack, so that the war can be portrayed as necessary for America's security or as retaliation for an attack against Americans. Foreign terrorist attacks also provide a pretext for suppressing domestic resistance, which, as I said, is a matter of greater concern to the government anyway. A foreign attack gives the media an opportunity to whip the lemmings into a flag-waving, we all must support our president mood, in which there is no tolerance for dissent. And it gives the government an opportunity to enact repressive legislation that can be used to stifle domestic resistance to a certain degree. We are seeing both these consequences of the September 11th attack now. The downside of the September 11th attack for the government and the media is the rise in anti-foreigner and anti-immigration sentiment among the public. It's a downside for the government and the media because keeping America's borders open is an important element of the New World Order scheme. I also suspect that the government would prefer that the next foreign terrorist attack against the United States not be quite as damaging to the U.S. economy as the September 11th attack. A few more like that could destabilize the economy and generate a lot of public unrest. Except when they really need a good excuse to start another war, the government and media schemers can make much better use of domestic terrorism, especially if it can be blamed on anyone who seriously opposes their schemes. The media bosses and other Jewish leaders really were reaching after the Oklahoma City bombing in an effort to blame that on me, just because I wrote a novel 25 years ago in which there is a truck bomb attack on a U.S. government building. They're really hoping now that it will turn out that the anthrax letters are being mailed by a heterosexual white male who doesn't like Jews and is connected to an organization of similar heterosexual white males, so that the government will have an excuse for shutting down the organization and enacting even more restrictive legislation. I'll guarantee you this. If it is a white American who eventually is charged with the anthrax letters, you will hear a lot more about it from the media than you will if it turns out to be some Muslim immigrant from the Middle East. And of course, if it turns out to be a Jew just trying to stir up anti-Muslim sentiment by signing the letters, Allah is great, you won't hear about it at all unless you're a news junkie like me. People like George Bush, John Ashcroft, and all the other politicians who are committed to the Jewish New World Order really are determined to abolish our Bill of Rights. They want to bring U.S. law into line with that in Canada, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, and most of the rest of Europe, where anyone who speaks out against Jewish control or Jewish influence can be imprisoned by the government. And I must tell you, this government and media program of curtailing our civil liberties worries me much more than the prospect of more hijacked airliners or truck bombs. At the moment, the program the government and media people are pushing is military court-martials and summary executions for suspected terrorists. Secret evidence, no right to confront one's accuser, no jury, just a military officer who decides whether or not to have you shot as a suspect. But don't worry, they tell us. This is only for suspected terrorists who aren't U.S. citizens. If you're a citizen, the new rule doesn't apply to you. Well, let me tell you, I worry anyway. I worry when the media Jews and the FBI both begin talking about how convenient it would be if they could torture suspects to extract information. And Attorney General John Ashcroft praises a new law which provides for summary executions for suspected terrorists who aren't citizens. I worry because I know that one thing leads to another. I know these bastards who run our government and own our mass media. I know that they regard each new encroachment on our freedom as just another step toward their ultimate goal, which is no freedom at all for us. Today, a law giving them a license to shoot suspected terrorists who aren't citizens. Tomorrow, a law extending the shooting license to include citizens. George Bush and John Ashcroft and all the rest of the New World Order enthusiasts around them are evil men. They are evil men, and they also are dangerous men because they have the support of the mass media. And because they have the support of the mass media, They also have the support of the great mass of Americans who don't have a thought in their heads that didn't come from their television screens. The yahoos with the little flags tied to their car antennas believe that being patriotic means not criticizing the government. It means doing what the government tells you to do. It means believing what the government tells you to believe. If the government tells you that a law permitting the shooting of suspected terrorists will make us all safer, then the flag wavers are all for it. If another law permits the secret police to break into your house while you're away and search through your personal belongings and private papers to find evidence against you without telling you about it, then that must be a good thing, too. Otherwise, the government wouldn't do it, right? Laws are essential for order, and a government also is essential to administer and enforce the laws. The type of government and the system of laws suitable for one people might not be suitable at all for another people, another nation. I certainly would not want to live in a society ruled by the Taliban. But the Taliban at least gave the Afghans law and order. And my belief is that it is not a good thing for us to tell other nations how they should conduct their internal affairs or what sort of laws they should have. It is not our business to decide whether or not Afghan women should be required to wear burqas. I wonder if the flag-waving Americans who are cheering what George Bush has done to Afghanistan by destroying law and order there have any idea what life would be like in America without law and order. I often encounter really foolish people who believe that if we're tolerant and respect other people's rights, they'll respect ours. That if we share what we have with others so that no one is really deprived of what he needs, then we can all live together in our wonderfully diverse, multicultural society, even without a government and laws. These people don't understand that without fear of the police to keep our multicultural elements in line, America quickly would devolve into savagery. Without order, the flower child types who preach tolerance would be hunted down for meat and eaten alive on our city streets. Even if we had an all-white society, we would need laws respected by our people. Without laws, there is no order. And without order, there is only savagery. Every gang boss, every religious nut with a few followers, every cult leader would be fighting with others for turf, for followers, for resources, for power. For most people, life would be hell. Our people spent a long time, thousands of years, developing a system of laws and government to provide order for our societies so that we could live useful and productive lives. George Bush and the media bosses, who are so eager now to abolish the hard-won laws that provide for our rights, our liberties, and to make new laws giving more and more control of our lives to the government, undermine respect for the laws and for the government. They may retain the support of the yahoos, but it wasn't yahoos who established our rights and built our system of laws in the first place. The yahoos always just went along for the ride. The government, by becoming more repressive and more intrusive, delegitimizes itself and provides a prerequisite for its overthrow. When that happens, we'll all be in peril until something new and healthier is formed from the chaos. But I cannot help but wish that George Bush is still around during the chaos so that he can experience some of the things the Taliban prisoners in Afghanistan are experiencing now at the hands of his Northern Alliance pals. Thanks for being with me again today.